That's my notification.
Eric, you gotta get started. Let me know when we're recording. We're live. Alright, we are recording, everyone, just so you know. Good evening, everyone. I'm going to get tonight's meeting started. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Cramsey Smith. Ms. Kwiatek.
Present.
Ms. Laird. Ms. Leone.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Klum.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Councilwoman Cramsey Smith will not be joining us this evening as she hopefully is enjoying her vacation. And then Councilwoman Laird is just running a few minutes behind. She will be with us in a few minutes. Moving on to the approval of minutes for the September 16, 2025 council meeting. Any comment on the minutes from September 16? Seeing none, the minutes will stand approved. We're going to move on to public comment. As is custom, we will start with any subject not being voted on this evening. For those who are unfamiliar, we have a 5-minute time limit. And then I'll start with whoever signed up in advance, and then I will go around the room and invite anyone else who wants to make comments to speak. So our first speaker signed up this evening is Artie Curatola. And anyone who's speaking, if you just don't mind stating your record, or excuse me, stating your name for the record for our city clerk. And I welcome Councilwoman Laird also. No problem. Mr. Curatola, you have the floor.
Hello, everybody. I'm Artie Curatola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Southside. I don't know about you, but I am pretty well fed up with the situation. I'm sure most of you are, with how things are going in our country. That if people want to speak, they get shot, killed. Hey, the safety isn't there for someone. We don't have respect for human lives. That's what happened to Charlie Kirk. I feel it was definitely. Things have to be done. Tighter security needs to be in place. Metal detectors, even here, every public meeting, every event, every festival, people should be going through metal detectors. No public meetings, or should I say, speeches should be given except inside of a place. So someone won't be hiding up in a roof to go ahead and shoot somebody in the neck or in the head. We got to put tighter security in our country to make it. The metal detectors, we might have to all work for a little bit less to make it happen. Actually, I don't know how many elected officials are hiding 10% of their to what they feel is godlike. Now, that says it in not only the New Testament, but the Old Testament as well, to tithe at least 10%. If I get elected, which is going to be a miracle if it is, for the mayor of the city, I don't want one penny. Not one. I'm not married. I got no kids that I know of. So I don't need the money. I will do the job. But the thing is, other people, well, of course you need the money, but 10% is what we're supposed to tithe, according to many prophets wrote this, not just Jesus. Many people wrote this in the Bible. 10%. And that would take care of the situation with a lot of the homeless people, and especially the American Indians, who God gave this land to, that we stole it from. 10% could take care of the homeless situation. Everybody that's an elected official would give. Everybody, not just elected officials, everybody, no matter what your job is, provided you have a decent job. I mean, if not, then you should be deported, of course. You know, like, if you have a decent job, no, it doesn't matter if you're a citizen. You shouldn't be pushed to be a citizen. If you want to be a citizen, you become a citizen of the United States. You're going to get benefits. Otherwise, you don't get the benefits. Simple as that. You should be able to work freely. The land, like all the American Indian chiefs said, it's for everybody. God put this land for everyone. Then Harrison and Tyler came along and said, so, you don't own the land? No, nobody owns the land. We don't own the land. Oh, well, you put that in writing, that will help you. And what did they do? They put them on reservations. They made them walk until they dropped and died. They killed their children so they wouldn't become braves. They killed the women so they wouldn't bear braves. Yes, we own the American natives, American Indians, a lot. But one thing, we need to make the city more secure. So we're an example of other cities to do the same thing. Metal detectors need to be placed in every gathering. Maybe, I don't know. Pray about the right thing to do. Because I'm sure God is with most of us. Because we are a God-fearing country. And we will do the right thing. I'm sure. God bless.
Our next speaker is Harry Faber.
Harry Faber. 2 years ago today, the most broadcasted and live-streamed genocide the world has ever seen began. For 2 years, the city on the hill stayed silent during the most broadcasted and live-streamed genocide in history. For 2 years, we watched our tax dollars and finite resources fund the Israeli regime's attempt at exterminating an entire race. For 2 years, we saw their strength as the survivors of this genocide refused to give up their homeland. As Dr. Omar Suleiman said, quote, 2 years of torn limbs, desperate cries, mass slaughter, forced starvation. A genocide preceded by 75 years of apartheid, occupation, and land confiscation paid for by our tax dollars. The horror didn't begin in 2023. It just became too visible to deny. End quote. For 2 years, we watched between 100,000 and 200,000 tons of bombs being dropped in an area the size of Philadelphia, killing over 66,000 people that we know of. But experts recently estimated 136,000 violent deaths and 544,000 deaths due to imposed deprivation. To put that in perspective, Bethlehem is a city of roughly 80,000 people. At bare minimum, 82.5% of our population would have been violently murdered, if not 1.7 times Bethlehem's population. This past week, we watched the most live-streamed and documented attempt at delivering humanitarian aid into Gaza, only for Israel to commit more war crimes, kidnapping and torturing the activists on the Samud flotilla. This past week, we also witnessed the imperial boomerang in effect. The same tactics and action used by the IOF to abduct Palestinians from their homes were used by ICE in Chicago. This terrorist attack, dubbed Operation Midway Blitz, we saw approximately 300 armed federal agents, some reportedly rappelling from a Black Hawk helicopter onto the roof of a 130-unit apartment building, where, according to resident accounts, agents broke down doors, used flashbangs, and restrained residents with zip ties, including children. Residents reported being held for hours, with some claiming agents pointed guns at them. In total, 37 people were kidnapped. However, residents reported that U.S. citizens, including children and a military veteran, were also detained for hours before being released. Now, genocide is nothing new for the American Empire, and I cannot attest to your complicity to our crimes of the past. But what I can say in confidence is that for the last 2 years, you have been silent. Some of you may say, this is a foreign policy issue. It's not our place. That is a coward's excuse. It is your place because our tax dollars are involved. It is your place because our community members are grieving and demanding action. It is your place because the principles of justice, human rights, and dignity you swore to uphold do not stop at our city's limits. You have the power of the pulpit. You have the power to pass a resolution condemning the genocide and calling for an immediate permanent ceasefire. You have the power to divest our city's funds from any companies or bonds that profit from this oppression. You have the power to stand with the millions of Americans and the vast majority of people on this planet who are screaming for this to stop. And yet you have chosen not to use that power. And in that choice, you have stained our city's reputation.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Our next person signed up. Yeah, give us 1 second, everyone will address the technical issue. Thank you.
Continue.
We'll address it. We'll get it going. Thanks, Brian. Our next speaker signed up is Jan Beatty.
Hi, yes. Jan Beatty, 321 East Wall Street. Just a simple word of appreciation to Public Works. We're relatively new in the city and had a concern and issue that we called into them, and just wanted to commend Angela and I think Greg, who's in charge of street electrical or something, for just being very attentive and professional and getting the help that we needed. So we appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Alcalt, your department. Next is Lynn Rothman.
Lynn Rothman, 870 Wofford Lane, Bethlehem. I'm speaking first on behalf of the Environmental Advisory Council. We've been recently working with our sustainability managers there. Sarah DeGrando, to set priorities to re-engage our committees in order to bring some of the strategies in the Climate Action Plan to fruition. I'd like everyone to be aware that on November 20th at 9 a.m., there will be an update on the Climate Action Plan at City Hall. It will be live streamed and I'm sure recorded. Each sector of the Climate Action Plan, such as land use and green space, local food and waste, transportation and mobility, environmental justice, etc., will give a report on the progress made in 2025 and the goals for 2026. I'd also like to announce that there's an open position on the EAC, so City Council will be appointing a new member in January. So if you or anyone that you know of would like to apply, it just requires a letter of interest and a resume to be sent to our email at eacbethlehempa@gmail.com, or you can just go to our website, which is bethlehemeac.org, and learn more about what we do. You must be a resident of Bethlehem City to serve on the EAC. That's really the only requirement. And while I will not be renewing my position in January to serve on the EAC, I just wanted to say that it's been my privilege to serve. It's been rewarding and my pleasure to work with the city administration, the city staff, and city council. And the progress we've made and continue to make on the goals of the CAP, especially with Sarah DeGrando in her position as sustainability manager, are positive. So really recognition to Mayor Reynolds years ago when he was on council for initiating the Climate Action Plan, and then the members of City Council for supporting it and for allocating the funds for Climate Action Plan. Easton then followed suit with their own Climate Action Plan, and you may have seen in the news Allentown City just allocated funds for a climate action plan. So that's the good news. Speaking personally to the speaker that spoke before me, October 7th also marks the day that Israel was invaded and people were beheaded and raped and captured and kidnapped and terrorized, and that Hamas itself is really not a Palestinian organization. They really are not helping the Palestinian people. And Israel and the United States has been supplying food, but it has been taken by Hamas, who is in control. So there's so many complexities to this situation. Of course, what is going on right now to the Palestinian people is abhorrent and devastating, but it is a very complex situation. So thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Rothman.
So that exhausts our list of who had signed up. There are a few people who signed up for second public comment, but a couple of them, I think, perhaps meant to sign up for first public comment, as this is the time to speak on anything not being voted on. So I'll first recognize Mary Tomlinson, if I'm correct that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello, good evening. I'm Mary Tomlinson. I live in Allentown. I am here on behalf of our local and mass incarceration group to speak about my concerns regarding Zach Colbert's arrest. We have members of End Mass Incarceration Power Lehigh Valley denounced the way Lehigh County Commissioner Zach Colbordy has been treated regarding criminal allegations recently made by the District Attorney's Office. Although no haste appeared at all necessary for this case, nevertheless, Zach was arrested at his workplace immediately. Zach was assessed a high bail immediately, and Zach was fired from his job. Numerous stories about him were published in all forms of public media immediately. Whether intentional or not, prosecutors presented the case against Mr. Colbordy in an inflammatory manner. While declining to mention any of the other numerous defendants, the DA's office included only Mr. Colbordy's name, placed alongside extremely serious allegations against various people. Other sectors of the community have also failed Mr. Colbordy. The city of Bethlehem failed him by firing him in just hours, leaving him and his family in turmoil. The media failed public servant Mr. Colbordy by neglecting to explain the context of the charge, but that there were no details or criminal complaint. Media sources simply regurgitated the sparse allegations disseminated by the DA's office harmfully. The opposite of the hallowed principle of the presumption of innocence has occurred, a rush to judgment that should chasten and concern us all. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight.
Thank you. And our next speaker is Sharon Finnegan.
Good evening. I wanted to speak tonight about the incident that happened here in August. And by incident, I am talking about the city of Bethlehem's ugly and blatant denial of basic rights and dignity of a city employee. The charges and unsubstantiated blame barely made public before Zach Colbordy was fired. Two city council members immediately went on record as calling the situation distressing and disheartening while insinuating further involvement. The city of Bethlehem had no comment on the matter, but stated that he was no longer an employee of the city. That is a profound comment. The handling of this was dirty and sloppy. Zach Colbordy is also a Lehigh County commissioner. Lehigh County commissioners did not call this disheartening or distressing, did not immediately presume his guilt, gave Mr. Colbordy the dignity and the opportunity to make a statement, and he remains on the Board of Commissioners. Shockingly, Local media had no issue fully prosecuting in the newspaper. And local TV graphics on screens behind them were, while reporting, were blatantly inflammatory. To date, there has been no other name put out publicly. Zach Kohlborgi is known and respected in the community. He's been a devoted public advocate for years, giving voice to people who don't have a voice, as well as a dedicated public employee. And despite this, he has been given no due process and no presumption of innocence. From the outside looking in, this looks shockingly ugly and dirty. It looks racist and politically partisan. And all I can say is we have to do better. Thank you.
Thank you. That exhausts our list of who had signed up in advance, so I'll go around the room. Again, we're on public comment for anything not being voted on this evening. Was there anyone to the left who wants to make comment or anything not being voted on? Sir? And again, I ask if you could state your name for the record for the minutes.
Hi, my name is Mike Stoffer. I live in Bethlehem. Before I say anything, I just wanted to compliment Mike, you, on your leadership. Very often you'll say, if you need to talk to anybody, hang around till after the meeting and we'll be glad to talk to you. I have found that to be true. And in every case, whether I was talking to Brian or I can't remember your name, but I've met quite a few of you, always been, this isn't a, to set up a criticism, by the way. But it's very true. And I appreciate it. You always have let me talk. You let other people talk. Very respectful. So thank you. You run a good show. The reason I'm here is, I'll just use an allegory. I remember when my son graduated from high school, a lot of parents probably would go through something like this. You look and you go, wow, when did that happen? Like, when did my son grow up? Like in the blink of an eye, things just change, right? And you look back, you remember like everything that brought you to that point, and you just scratch your head. You go, how did time pass so fast? How did we get where we're at? And I was driving the other day down, if you come off Stefco, everybody knows it. You know, you go onto Easton Avenue to William Penn Highway if you're trying to go down to the township or down to Easton, right? And I remember turning and looking way, way, way down the road at a lone traffic light, and traffic was moving like 8 cars at a time, and then the light would change, and it took like at least 12 to 13 minutes to go, probably a quarter mile. And this is just, we accept this, like people just go, well, yeah, that's Bethlehem, that's just the way it is, it's crazy there, right? And I remember my mind thinking, how did we get here? Like, it just seems like the blink of an eye. I remember you used to be able to traverse around town fairly fluently, and I go, like, what happened? And anymore, it just seems like when you drive around, like, the pace of development, I'm not anti-progress, but something's different in the last few years. It seems like there's almost an urgent rush, like a obsession with building and developing, like every square foot. If you blink an eye, if you don't go to a certain part of town for 3 weeks, you're liable to come back and see a crane there erecting like a three-story structure. It's almost overwhelming. It's like overwhelming, and it's so much, and it's so constant, and it's so relentless that as a citizen, trying to be a respectful citizen, trying to be balanced. Brian, by the way, you did a great job. The last time I talked, you gave an eloquent talk about the balance. Like, yeah, hey, we hear you, but we do have competing interests, right? And it's hard to find that sweet spot. And I appreciate that, and I can accept and respect that. But I would just say as a citizen, man, if there's any flexibility, whatever wiggle room, whatever power you do possess, to maybe somehow just slow it down just a little bit. The pace is just, it's like warp speed, right? Bethlehem, and I said it before, the town of Bethlehem is we're close, if we're not already there. We're not a town anymore. We're the city of Bethlehem, heading for metropolis of Bethlehem, heading most sadly toward an enigma, just a big overflow of just city, going from Allentown to Bethlehem to Easton. No separation, no clear identity, just a lot of cars, a lot of condos, a lot of apartments, right? And I want to close by saying, I know, and again, I appreciate, there's no magic bullet, so I'm not standing here criticizing and then just walking away. I'm saying, I get it. I accept that. I respect that. I'm just saying, wow, if there's anything you have in your arsenal, to just kind of, anywhere you can, to slow things down a little bit, it would really be appreciated by the vast majority of residents in Bethlehem. Again, I know it's cliche, but the very reason that people want to come to Bethlehem and live here is the very thing that seems to be disappearing and quickly leaving us, literally as the days and hours go by. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Was there anyone else still left? I'll turn to the wide center. I'll start with Gary Baptist, sir.
Mark Weber, your talk about water as usual, West Elizabeth Avenue. I apologize for not signing up the list. I recently got brought out of retirement to coach at Lehigh, so I'm just getting here for practice. So this is an aquahawk I have up here. It's the mountain hawk, but I do want to talk about aquahawk and these downloadable apps that would protect the citizens from high water bills. And it's pertinent again because if I don't, or anybody on council, I know you can't talk, but maybe you have to raise a hand, or if there's anybody look at Complainers of Bethlehem, which is a site on the, it's a much bigger site than the Drip. We're almost 400 people now, but Complainers, I think, is 9,000, a lot of people on it. Very recently, in the last week, there was a lot of people on there saying, man, my water bill is like double what it was before. Now that I have a smart meter in, the one woman in particular had a $296 bill for the quarter, two people in the residence. And prior to the smart meter, she usually was about $140 for the quarter, so more than double. It's significant. And then other people came on. My bill's high too. And to be fair, there were some people that came on and said that their bill was more or less what it always had been. Now, whether they had gotten their smart meters or not yet, I don't know. But, and then right away people came on and said, well, maybe you got a leak, and Mr. Boscolo's favorite, maybe your toilet flapper is loose. And my point that I went on and immediately made was that if you had Aquahawk or iWater, one of these downloadable apps, she wouldn't be finding out at the end of 3 months that there was a problem. They would have caught the leak within days, if not within hours, because you can, you know, monitor your water by the hour. And this is just going to keep going on and on until, you know, this gets implemented. People are going to have these higher water bills, not just the mega bills that got me and my wife and got the solitario woman, but these just double bills, you know, just high bills that could be often headed off at the pass if we just had this app, which is quite commonplace at city comparable cities, as I said before, whether it's Ann Arbor, Michigan, or, you know, various places, okay? And Mr. Boscolo, I think a couple meetings ago, had said, well, I don't get a lot of demands for this. Well, guess what? You don't have anything about these apps on your website, so you don't know what you don't know, right? When I got my smart meter over 2.5 years ago now, I didn't know about this app. I just found out about it in the months after that because I'm researching this issue and this problem. Otherwise, I wouldn't know about it. If I had known about it, I would have been jumping up and down and say, you know, where's my aquahawk? Where's my eye on water? You know, you're making me take this meter. I can't even, I have no say in the make or the model of this meter, and I have to take it. The very least you could do is give me this this app that would protect me against high bills and help me identify leaks early. Now, yeah, so I'd love to see something about that on there. Right now, if you look, I'm sure you won't see anything. You have a better chance of finding a leprechaun under the Filthahee Bridge than any info about this app, which is of great benefit to the citizens. He also expressed that, you know, how are we going to pay for it, that kind of thing. Well, hand-wringing might be $100,000. They're making hundreds of thousands of dollars when they get this all these smart meters in. They're going to make hundreds of thousands of dollars from it. And I've come to that conclusion because I've looked at other cities. This guy in Texarkana, who's basically the Ed Boscolo of Texarkana, Gary Smith, and he's on a TV station a couple months ago down there going that they expect to make over $500,000 in revenue from their new smart meters once they're in. And they have downloadable apps for their people, even though that city has a 20% plus poverty rate. But their citizens are protected. So take some of that money that you're making and give the citizens the protection that they deserve. Unless we're not as good as the people in Appleton, Wisconsin, or Ann Arbor, Michigan, and on and on and on. I think we should be, and these guys should have the expertise to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woolweber. Anyone else in the center? Sir, to my immediate left. Yep, in the center. Or in the middle row.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Sean Kernan. I live in West Bethlehem, 414 West Market. Something I wanted to share tonight, I'm not fully prepared. It's a fairly complicated story that I'd like to tell. But I'm a Fab Lab instructor, part of an adjunct instructor at Northampton Community College on Southside Fowler Center. And it was probably the third week of August that I was walking around Southside, probably going to either Starbucks or somewhere around town. And I came across these stickers on the street. So this is, these are really stuck well. So these were stickers that were in the right of way on the sidewalk. This is for an event called Lehigh Lounge. And this was an event at Country Club Brewing, which is just off of the Greenway. So this is part of sort of Startup Lehigh Valley or startup event. It's some sort of entrepreneurship event on Southside at Country Club Brewing. And it was Friday, August 8th and Saturday, August 9th during Music Fest. Okay. When I was walking around Southside, probably, let's call it August 15th or August 20th, trying to, you know, clear my head. I'm an engineer, I'm a product developer, I'm an instructor at the Fab Lab as well. I like to go for walks and I like to clear my head. I'm probably going to run out of time, but as I was walking on the street, I saw these stuck to the ground, very well stuck to the ground. Okay, so these are pretty big. They're in the right of way, and also in, I believe, the historic district as well. So these are in the right of way on the ground on Southside Bethlehem. Seeing those, I thought it was very interesting to see street advertisements like these on the sidewalk, for one. I went to school in Ohio. I'm originally from Ohio, but I've lived here in Bethlehem for 10 years. Where I went to school, at Ohio State, had I grown up in Pennsylvania, I would have gone to Penn State. But things like this on my campus would not have been tolerated at all, because it sets a really poor precedent for advertising on campus for events and other things. So we were instructed to use chalk to advertise for events and that sort of thing. Through a variety of things, you know, this was also, the event finished up on the 8th and 9th of August. I saw these stickers still stuck there, let's call it the 20th of August. And I thought this was interesting, and I was actually part of the Southside Arts District Design Committee for the last year. I'm no longer part of it because my workload has increased. I presented these stickers to the group. And I said, hey, there are representatives from Lehigh here. There are representatives from Southside Arts District. There's representatives from Arts Quest that are also on the block. And I said, hey, I saw these stickers on the street. What are they doing here? Like, how did they get approved? What's the path here? Nothing happened. And I sort of just let them stay. I wanted to see how long they might last. Flash forward to the last week of August, they were still on the street. And I walked through, I actually tried to find as many as I could. There were six. And I actually have a map of all the places on Southside where these were stuck on the street, in crosswalks, pictures of these things, in public right-of-way. And I'm a person that's on Instagram, so I thought perhaps the Lehigh University or Country Club Brewing or some of these other institutions might want to know that this is happening. So I tagged these people on Instagram, showing, hey, there are these stickers. The event ended 3 weeks ago. Why are these stickers still polluting our streets? And nothing happened. A number of things continued on, but it wasn't until a month later that, having nothing happen and people being made aware of this, I decided to take it upon myself to take these off the street. Because they set a bad precedent for Southside Bethlehem and the historic district of Bethlehem. I'm running out of time. I'd like to sort of tell this story at some point when I have more time. There's more to it, and people need to be held accountable, in my opinion, for stuff like this. Polluting the streets.
Thank you. You're welcome to stick around after the meeting, as I was referenced earlier,
yep.
Or all of our individual emails, including the city clerk who could forward all of us anything, is available on the city council website.
Great.
On the city website.
Parting words, permits were not pulled for these, and that's problematic.
Understood.
Thanks.
Was there anyone else in the wide center who wanted to make comment this evening? Ms. McCool.
Mary Jo McCool, 449 Grandview Boulevard. Several items to present. First is the continuing speeding. Salisbury Township recently began using the NRED system of controlling speed. NRED stands for Electronic Non-Radar Device. A set distance is measured out and laid out. One patrol car uses a stopwatch to time the vehicle from point A to point B. Speed is then calculated. Speed equals distance divided by time. If a vehicle is speeding, police up ahead are notified and a ticket is issued. It might be beneficial to inquire Salisbury Township Police its effectiveness and to do several ride-alongs. While I admit there is room for error, it might be worthwhile to investigate the system to try to reduce speeding in the city. Second, what is the city doing regarding tax dollars spent to support the Bethlehem Co-op fiasco? The money could have and should have been allocated to address the homelessness issue. Regarding, I'll come back to that issue in a second. I recently had a long row of arborvitae taken down. As I'm getting older, they are harder to maintain, and the estimates that I had to maintain them were ridiculously out of price. So I had them taken down, and I had estimates for a vinyl privacy fence. I selected one company, and I inquired as to whether or not I needed a permit. The city said, yes, I needed a permit. And I said, I already have a fence. Why do I need a permit to install a new fence inside my existing fence? And they said, well, I needed the permit to ensure that the new fence was no taller than 6 feet. My complaint is that my arborvitae, the chain link fence that was there, was 5 feet, and that was installed over 35 years ago. The arborvitae were 7.5 feet tall. I installed a 6 foot high fence. I paid the permit, but it seems redundant that I already had a fence and I needed a permit to install another fence inside. I think it's just a money-making scheme, and it's just more regulation that, you know, is what we need to get rid of in some cases. Now, going back to the homeless issue. Regarding the Martin Tower situation, I have watched council meetings, and I want to throw in my two cents regarding a LRTA designation to this project, and for that matter, the Hanover apartment project. Norton Herrick is the majority owner of both properties. Please keep in mind that this man is a billionaire, that's a B, and can readily afford to pay the taxes. If that is a problem for him because of numerous zoning issues and legal wrangling, he should have thought about that before making such large land purchases. Years ago, this issue of a LRTA designation was proposed, and Bethlehem School District voted against granting it. Bethlehem School District felt that it would be detrimental to families struggling to stay in their homes. That issue has only become more prevalent with the current homelessness situation. As a senior on fixed income, I too feel the crunch, and I've had to make choices to simplify maintenance to my property, and this simplification has come at a cost which I will have to absorb. I have a copy of an opinion letter that was written by Mr. Antalix, and it was in the Sunday paper on September 17th, 2023, and it's entitled, "Taxpayers Shouldn't Have to Help a Billionaire Redevelop Martin Tower." And I've got a copy for everyone.
Can we just pass it down?
Sure. There should be enough there.
Thank you, Ms. Wong.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else in the wide center? Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, 1898. Incidentally, I think it's good to hear addresses so we know where people live. I mean, not that we're going to do anything to them, but just it's informative. I had a conversation the other day with a police officer, and I learned that I haven't confirmed it yet, but he seemed to know what he was talking about, that the strength of the police department is now down to 133, and the authorized strength is 154. That's a deficit of 21 officers. Budget time is coming up. I asked him, why is Bethlehem having more problems than other jurisdictions in the Lehigh Valley? And the sense that I got is that not to any great extent. It's Easton used to be, well, he said the main problem he thinks is the salaries in Bethlehem are too low. He said Easton used to be at the bottom, and they've raised their salaries, and they're doing better. So it's budget time. And if this is the case, and I think the chief can be relied upon to let you know if it is the case, we would need some comparisons with other jurisdictions in the valley, and if that's the case, we need to do something about it. I mean, officers like to come here. Some of them, anyway. I know one officer who was working in Anacostia in the District of Columbia, and he didn't say so, but I'm sure he appreciates that there's a lower level of crime here than there is in Anacostia. But that's not enough. We need to pay our officers decently, and so that they can do some other things, like giving more attention to reckless driving. You've heard me talk about this before, and by the way, I don't do that maneuver anymore where I get on the on-ramp to 378 from Union Boulevard, but stay on the on-ramp and then go to the off-ramp to get to 8th Avenue. It's a great time saver, but there was just too many things happening, and council member Kwiatek said, "Bill, don't do that anymore." I thought about it, and I don't do it anymore. But something happened to me recently. I have an old car, as some of you know, and I think people think they can pick on me. Maybe I'm getting a little paranoid or something, but Friday night in Celtic Fest, I'm driving west on Broad Street between 3rd and 4th Avenue, and there's more congestion than usual, but not much, not a whole lot. There's a gap in the parking spaces on my right. I become aware of a smaller white sedan coming up on the right with a clear intention to cut in front of me. I was going, because of the congestion, I think I was going close to the speed limit, but a little bit less. And there was some space in front. So I probably shouldn't mention this, but I made a mistake. And this old car of mine has a 5-liter engine, and most people don't realize that. It's a Crown Vic. They were once police cars. And I decide I'm going to cut this son of a gun out. So I speed it up so he would be forced to stop before ramming into a parked car. Well, if I ever do that again, I got to do a better job of it. And otherwise, perhaps I should just slow down and let him get in front. Just hope he doesn't kill someone. He or she did not give up and speeded up further. Cut in front, I swear, with a foot to spare. No accident, no contact. But this is an example. I don't think this is an isolated case. This is an example, and like this gentleman here was talking about, what's going on in the city. Part of the problem is the immigrants from New Jersey, and they bring their driving habits with them when they move here. But if we had more police officers, we could do more about this. So it's budget time. Let's treat our officers well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the wide center who wants to make a comment? Doesn't have a chance? Oh, ma'am, you've already addressed council.
I didn't state my name, so Sharon Finnegan Allen.
Thank you, Ms. Finnegan. Mr. Antalix?
Did you catch that?
Sharon Finnegan.
Stephen Antalix, 77 Ridge. I had the occasion to drive on East 3rd Street, and I was forced to stop and park and just observe a continued tragedy. The monstrosity that's going up under the name of arts. I recall way back a fish market there, and a sign said, if it swims, we sell it. And theories, bananas, that's all gone. And I thought, if a resident moved away for 50 years and came back to Bethlehem, drove on Main Street, that'd be relaxed because Main Street wouldn't look like it looked 50 years ago. But if that person drove on 3rd Street, as I was, he'd be shocked. He will not recognize Bethlehem. Why? Because the Barkin House is gone, which could have become like a ready market, and its day was the center of the Lehigh Valley. And all the shops along 3rd Street had historic significance. They're all gone. Where was the marketplace? It's a gas station. Who ever heard of a gas station in the center of the business district? It happens in Bethlehem, but on the south side. Another abortion is that the South Side Historic District includes West Bethlehem. Why? Way back, West Bethlehem was a borough adjacent to, guess who? The borough of Bethlehem. And they were separated by the borough of South Bethlehem by a river. But the wise people of Bethlehem decided to make the historic district include West Bethlehem and South Bethlehem, rather than keeping West Bethlehem with the borough of Bethlehem, which made sense. So, all the ordinances and resolutions concerning the preservation of South Side have become paper tigers. They mean nothing. They mean nothing. Because, over an example, as I mentioned a number of times, and I harped this many years, to destroy the South Side ambience by calling five students a family. And I said they were transients, and I was called down by a member of council because I referred to them as transients and claiming, the person claimed that they were residents, which is absurd. So what's the solution? There is none. There is none. It's too late. But, as you probably hear later, the disease that destroyed the South Side is slowly creeping across the river to the North Side. And definitions are changing. And what used to be is now including new developments. So the line between the two is being blurred. So maybe in 15, 20 years, Berlin, rather than Main and Market, may look differently. Because the city has lost integrity to maintain its history. Sad. Very sad.
Thank you, Mr. Antal. Is there anyone else in the wide center who hasn't had a chance to speak, wants to make a comment? Anyone to the right? All right, that's going to conclude our first public comment. Moving on to second public comment. This is for any ordinance or resolution that council is voting on this evening. The 5-minute time limit still applies. We have two people signed up, first being Bruce Haynes.
Okay, thank you. Bruce Haynes, Church Street, Bethlehem. I just want to set the record straight, Bill. I'm a New Jersey immigrant from years ago.
Watch how you drive.
I'm here to talk about my concern over the contract for, consulting contract for Northside Alive. Northside Alive, when it was formed in 17, was essentially designed to look at the bladed area of the residential area north of the Central Business District and west of the east of the Central Business District, including the Linden Street commercial buildings, etc. And somehow this year, early in the year, it came to my attention that now it also did include, acknowledge the ability for the Boyd Theater to be benefit from whatever economic benefits Northside Alive could have to help the blight, which obviously it was blighted at that time. Earlier this year, I discovered that the boundaries of Northside Alive somehow had creeped down to the block from Main Street to Getter Street, which is the Liberty Center, including all the new buildings there on Broad Street, on the north side of Broad Street. So clearly there was no need to include them into the blighted area to help improve the North Side Alive residential district. And so effectively what they did is it intruded into the downtown commercial business district and divided Broad Street into North Side Alive on the north and the historic district and historic downtown on the, to the south. I don't understand when that happened, why that happened. It only became to my attention the beginning of the year, when effectively those people on the north side of Broad Street were the ones who voted to do away with the downtown DBA board completely. Their vote did away with the board and disintegrated the DBA. And it's basically it's divided the downtown between Main Street and North Broad Street. I don't understand why it got included. Again, it's not residential. It's part of the downtown commercial business district. So I don't know what this new study is going to do, and is it going to include more? And so they're going to creep into the historic district. Where is this, and what's it about? It was a very serious situation from my perspective. It has, as I said, it's impacted the entire downtown business district. And perhaps someone from the administration can explain when that happened. Did the city council vote to change the boundaries somewhere along the way, and when did that happen?
Well, there'll be an opportunity for council to ask questions as we do on the floor, Mr. Haynes.
Thank you.
Our next speaker signed up this evening is Jeffrey Parks.
My name is Jeffrey Parks, 223 East Church Street. I meandered 3 blocks from my home to say something positive, but I hate to be that unique. I wanted to first of all thank all of you for spending your time, the administration people, the mayor, the council, to be our public servants, to watch over our community. And you could be sitting at home and watching Jeopardy like I usually am every night, but instead you're here taking care of business for the city. I was here to offer my support and encouragement for the continued support of the UNESCO World Heritage Site and the request for the $150,000 to support the position generously created and partially supported by Moravian University. 80 years ago, Bethlehem Steel hired a young man named Ralph Schwarz. Ralph Schwarz convinced Bethlehem Steel that to live to be a major industry and have their headquarters in this community, they had to do something to make the community look better. And rather than choose the part of town that had the mill in it, they made the north side the part of town that was better by creating all of the parklands that we enjoy on the north side of town here, and by investing money in historic preservation. The north side downtown completely changed. There was a brief period of time when this complex was created, when people decided that we needed something new and flashy to compete with the malls that were growing up in Whitehall Township. And that didn't work. So by 1984, when I was standing in this room pitching a dream or a long way to try to start the downtown here, get it back in shape, a little festival called Music Fest, we were relying, too, on the graciousness of the city, which donated police and fire, and the graciousness of Moravian College, which donated rooms. And you may not know this, but the first vendor at Fest Plots at Music Fest was the Wood Catering Service that moved their stuff from Moravian College's campus to sell Wiener Schnitzel and stuff for Music Fest. But it all came together. Here we stand 40 years later. I think the most important thing that you will do, because you're the generation now that's running the show, and I'm very happy for that, the most important thing you're going to do in this era is to support that UNESCO World Heritage Site designation, to do what needs to be done, to bring the various groups together to support that, to operate it, to maintain those facilities, part of which are on public land, but unlike many World Heritage Sites, it's diverse with many different owners and many different groups involved. And this is a good start with this heritage director that's supported by Moravia. That's it, I think, 40 years from now. I hope you're able to stand where I am and see a vigorous young city council that is building upon what you did. We all build on the shoulders of the people who came before us. And as the person who came before you and is leaving at some point in the not too distant future, I want to thank you for being where you are and express my hope that you will continue to support this World Heritage Site designation. I think it will have the same level of impact that Music Fest and Arts Quest have had in terms of the social, economic, and cultural development of this community for many years to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Park. So that exhausts our list for second public comment. Again, this is for anything council is going to be voting on this evening. So I'll go around the room. I'll start to the left. Is there anyone who hasn't had a chance who wants to make comment on anything that we're going to vote on? Again, I turn to the wide center relative to anything on the agenda. Mr. Shire?
No, sir. 1898 now. Do I notice there's a number of dollars on the agenda tonight for various services? $40,000 for Northside Alive, $12,000 to get help setting up the revolving loan fund, that's the lowest, $150,000 for the World Heritage Site Manager, which I guess involves some marketing, and a budget adjustment of $120,000 for downtown initiatives. And I'd like to focus on that because I'm wondering what this is. There's no explanation. Who gets the money? Is it to pay city employees? What are they doing? Or if it's going out of house, who's getting it? What kind of initiatives are in the future? How will they be done? What's the expected impact? I think that we are, at least the public, perhaps the council knows exactly what's going on here, but this public citizen does not, and perhaps the public is entitled to more information. Thank you very much.
Mr. Shire, can I ask you a favor of you? Can you just cite what agenda item you were referencing for anyone following along?
Yeah, isn't there a budget adjustment on the agenda for $120,000 to downtown initiatives?
We have two, or we'll go through the agenda. I don't know if you have the agenda item.
It's a communication that I'm assuming it was to be acted on tonight, but maybe I am mistaken. It wouldn't be the first time.
We'll go through the agenda, Mr. Shire.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to make comment on anything that we're voting on this evening? Okay. We're going to continue on. Thank you, everyone. Old business, any old business for members of council? New business? Any new business from members of council? I'll start with Mr. Collins.
Mr. Collins, could you address Mr. Haynes' questions?
Now or?
Well, I would politely say that's an agenda item this evening, what Mr. Haynes was spoke about at the lectern. So I think that's, I'm not disagreeing with having discussion about it, but that'll be a resolution that we're voting on tonight. Right. So we could have that conversation when we get to the resolution.
And the other thing is, last meeting we had asked for the list of all the funds that the Parking Authority has given to the city. We wanted to have a chance to get that list.
I do have it. I can read it off, or I can also send it by email if that's helpful. Since I'm here, I will read it off. So the Parking Authority contributes recurring every year to BEDCO for the Southside Arts District. They make a $95,000 contribution to the Lehigh Valley Chamber, or the Bethlehem Chamber of Commerce, $100,000 contribution to the Southside Ambassadors Program. As of this past year, they started making a $100,000 contribution to that program. And then they've also supported various one-time projects. We talked about Fairview Park, where they contributed $20,000 and then the street lights for Main Street, that's a $307,000 contribution. So a few of the things that the BPA has described that are supported, you know, through BEDCO or the chamber, things like salaries that support the downtown initiatives, either on the north side or the south side. It's contributed to Christmas decor and lighting, a new live advent door on the north side. Their contribution supported new Christmas Village huts, also helping revamp the website, and they also contribute annually to the tree lighting ceremony through some of those dollars.
Are all those additional items included in the numbers you gave?
Correct, yes.
Or are there additional?
No, those are illustrative of the types of things that their contributions that I just listed support.
Yeah, if you could just send it to us, I'd appreciate it. That's it, thank you.
Thank you. Any other new business from our council? Councilman Laird?
Oh, Ms. Collins. Sorry. I think it's a question for you. One of the commenters inquired about the food co-op and funding. And I've heard from other residents lately that they've seen a lot of posts floating around online, and they're asking questions about funding and making sure that it's being used appropriately. So I know the city manages the handling of the grant that the co-op received. It funnels through the city. Can you just talk about how those funds work in terms of the reimbursement and what checks and balances are in place to make sure that they're being spent appropriately, et cetera?
Sure. So the grant they're referring to, it's a they're federal dollars. It's referred to as community project funding or sometimes congressionally directed spending. So back 2021, there was an application for that bucket of funds, and it was awarded at the recommendation of then Congresswoman Susan Wild. So it's, you know, often these projects, they need support from their federal congresspeople. So the city of Bethlehem was the applicant, and the food co-op is essentially like the subrecipient. So we serve as in a pass-through role, which happens sometimes in federal grants in part because they're so challenging to administer, that having an entity like the city that has checks in place and processes by which we can administer federal funds, it makes a project more likely to be funded. So, you know, as the project has progressed, those funds do flow through the city. They're on a reimbursement basis. So essentially what happens is the food co-op will expend funds on various aspects of their project. They are within categories that are already approved by HUD. HUD is the granting federal agency. And you know, there are certain categories that they can spend money in, whether it's salaries or equipment or, you know, other, you know, types of expenditures. All of that as a plan first had to be approved by HUD. And then expenditures that the co-op makes have to fall within those categories of eligible expenses. They submit reimbursement requests that, you know, their federal grant consultant people put together. Essentially, a package would include everything from, you know, just their narrative about what it was spent on to like the actual, you know, canceled checks, pay stubs, you know, all the sort of backup documentation you might imagine that the federal government would ask for to not only get to show what the money was spent on and to like show that it was actually spent. So all of that will come through us and then go to HUD, and HUD looks at each expenditure and signs off or not before they distribute the funds to us, and then we distribute it to the co-op. So it's a long way of saying that yes, there are very robust checks and balances on how that bucket of money is spent.
And the
and,
money.
Oh, also, oh, yeah. And, so I'll also add that when the money goes out, even though it's already approved by HUD before it comes to us, it also has to be approved by our controller before it goes out the door as well.
Okay. And there was a question about, you know, could that money have been used for something else? Could it have been put towards homelessness projects, et cetera? It could not have been, correct?
No. Okay. So from the time that there's applications submitted, and then the congressionally directed spending process happens. You know, when the funds are awarded, they are funded to a specific applicant for a specific project, and they can't be reallocated by us or even the federal government.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Leon.
I have a question for Chief Cott, but thank you. And a shout out to Public Works. As always, you guys paved Fifth Street, which looks amazing. And now comes the inevitable zoom zooms. But it's amazing work, and everybody was made aware early enough, and parking was sorted. So once again, good work to Public Works. Chief Cott, how many cops do we have? Are we down to the 130s?
So we're authorized for 154. We currently have 14 vacancies. So those are open vacant positions. However, we do have officers that are out on long-term injury. We also have a number of officers that are away on military leave. So that would bring us down even more. Off the top of my head, I'm not quite sure, but we're either in the 140s or the high 130s.
Okay. All right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe our police officers' pay is set by collective bargaining.
Correct. And Mr. Evans could correct me, but they're going to be going into negotiations next year?
Yeah, current contract runs from 2023 through 2026. Mm-hmm. It'll expire 12/31/2026. So we will be entering into negotiations in 2026 for a new contract that will begin in 2027 to be determined. So next year, we're set, we're good to go, we're under contract. And we do understand Easton just had a new contract this year. So you tend to get one above the other. So when we go into negotiate next year, we're very aware of that contract, what that looks like. And it'll be part of a very large, complicated negotiation that will take probably most of the year to get through.
Always good luck with that.
Yes,
We've done some things recently to kind of help with recruitment. So there have been like bonuses, and there's also been, there was when we addressed those standards where we're trying to use more time and education to encourage. Have we been seeing positive results from that?
We have been. It's an issue across the board throughout the country. Even though there are some departments now that are getting more and more applicants, it's something that regionally we're seeing, you know, difficulty in. The applicant pool is no longer a pool, it's actually a puddle. So we're doing the best we can to attract people to come to the police department, to come to our city to serve, and we're going to continue to do that to try to get the best qualified, diverse candidates to serve in our police department.
I will say, like, I think you have to have a specific type of heart for policing to police in Bethlehem, because we police in a very specific way here. I think we have done things recently to try and invest more, like you got more vehicles and stuff. But I do think that there could be more that we could be doing. I think facilities, I don't want you to answer anything. These aren't questions, they're just general statements of like maybe facilities or anything else that we can do, or if you can think of anything that council can help with to encourage higher recruitment. I'm just thinking, you know, the facilities, additional trainings, the ability to like really create a well-rounded officer that has a community-first approach to policing. We're here, we're all ears, please let us know.
Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? I'll go back to Mr. Callahan.
Chief, I just want to get back on that. So do we have any data on police officers who have started their career here and possibly left to go for a higher paying police department?
I know the FOP is actively looking into that right now. There are at least two officers within the last 5 to 10 years that I know of that have left for another department that had only had roughly 5 to 10 years on the job that left to go to a higher paying department.
So it's not a large number, just, you know, a one-off here, one off there, as far as...
To my recollection, sir, yeah. Yes.
So my main question is that we're not training and hiring people, and then there's a number of them that are leaving for higher pay. Most of our officers, the overwhelming percentage of them, once they start here, they remain here.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? No. Allen?
Yeah, yes.
You still have the floor?
Yeah. Is the mayor all right? We haven't seen him in a while. Or is he ill, or is he just not able to come here?
No, the mayor's out almost every single night, as you know. The day of a mayor never ends, the week of a mayor never ends with regard to nights, weekends, and so yeah, if he is here, but he also has a number of other opportunities that he would like to also be present for across the city, so.
Where is he tonight? I'm just curious. Where is he tonight, though? You said he's got other opportunities.
I said that throughout the week, throughout the night, actually the weekends, I'm not going to talk about where he's at tonight, where he is or he's not. It's not really part of the conversation.
No, I thought you meant that he was at another function, and that's why he can't be here. So he's just missing tonight. I'm just curious, because we haven't seen him a lot. I miss him. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
We can send him your well wishes, Mr. Payne. Any other new business from members of council? So just a couple of brief things I want to touch on. First, I want to address Mrs. Rothman, who's still with us, who had announced that she, come the new year, will be ending her many, many years of dedicated service to the EAC, and we'll have opportunity to thank her for that. But I just want to remind everyone, the EAC shared with us information if we want to share them with our respective networks in search of volunteers to volunteer for the EAC. Another thing to bear in mind after the new year, and forgive me as I have a cough drop in, that per ordinance for the EAC, the chair of the EAC is appointed by city council. So that'll be the role of the new council members and the next council president, because I am, by our council rules, done as council president after the end of this year. So just something to bear in mind for the council members who will be staying on into the new year and our incoming council who follow along with the meetings, that not only will council be appointing a replacement, there are two potential reappointments who have expressed interest in staying on the EAC, but then also appointing a new chair, and I would anticipate that myself or the next council president and council would work in collaboration with the EAC, because Mrs. Rothman not only has been dedicated to the EAC as volunteer, but as the longtime chair of that volunteer body, has really done a great service, I'll just say to me, as council president for these last 4 years, in helping gather interest from the community, vet potential applicants, and again, there'll be opportunity to talk about that. But just something to raise awareness, because for even for myself, if we're, it's not something that we look at often, how that ordinance reads, so we'll have to manage that. I do just want to again restate what Councilwoman Leon had asked, and I don't need, unless I misspeak, Mr. Evans, you correct me, but our police department does operate under a collective bargaining agreement. So it is the role of the administration to negotiate that contract. So even if council, even if the will of council was to, make budget amendments relative to salaries, I would say that's outside the scope of a legislative role, as the chief negotiator for the administration is whoever the administration decides. And then the FOP, as the union, their leadership negotiates that. So it's not as easy as just saying, let's budget for this. There's labor relations aspect to it that just to bear in mind. Not that, to a speaker's point earlier, we wouldn't want to potentially make things more enticing, but there's a process to that as it relates to what it is that our officers agree to through their union. Mr. Evans, I did have one question, if you could briefly speak to it. With what's going on in Harrisburg, with the lack of a budget to date, the federal government being shut down, can you speak to how, if at all, the city operations are impacted by that? If we've seen any kind of any disruption to this point, or any kind of further in the year, depending on how long it goes, that the city may be impacted, especially in a noticeable way. I mean, I don't think snow removal is, depends on state or federal dollars, but I just didn't know if we would expect as council members or the public to see any disruption of city services, depending on how long these budget issues continue.
I'm just looking at myself to confirm with each of the department heads. I'm not aware, and we had staff this morning, so not aware of any impacts to the municipal operations by either the federal shutdown or the state budget impasse. So far, we're okay.
That's good news to hear. Thank you, Mr. Evans. And that was all I had, so thank you, everybody. We're going to move on to communicate. It's okay. Councilwoman Laird?
One more question. Regarding the advertisements on sidewalks, and it brings to mind another company that is known for prolific advertising all over public property and not public property. What do people do about that? What can, like, should they be reporting that in the My Bethlehem app? Should they, can the city actually do something if there's something on like a PPL pole that is not our property technically, right, but is maybe a right-of-way, or I realize that there's probably a blurry line, because then you're getting into like, oh, my neighbor put up a yard sale sign, and is that in the same category as something that's more permanent or more prolific? But I assume that would be you, Mr. Alcohol.
And certainly citizens can report these types of issues, and we can try to address them specifically with respect to something in the public right-of-way, like was described, the sign that was is essentially taped to the ground. I'd have to consult with our law bureau, but I'm not even sure, at least from a standpoint of the public right-of-way issue, whether there's a permit that would be applicable to that. Because for the most part, the permits, when they're required, is when you occupy the right-of-way, if you're encroaching, if you have any potential to interfere with either pedestrian or vehicle traffic in the public right-of-way, that's why you would need a permit, so we can assess that and evaluate that, issue the permit, and oversee the permit. There may be other things in community development that would prohibit something like that. As far as signs on poles, when there are poles, we take them down. When we have the time, we go around and we take them down. Even on PPL, we encourage them to take them down. If they don't take them down, we take them down, especially if there are signs that don't belong there. But what was described, I'm not sure. I'd have to evaluate that further to see if the city can actually act on it. Certainly, the abutting property owner could take those things off. So that's one possibility to address it.
In the case of something which doesn't sound like what it was described, but comes up, I'm sure, in other situations, if there's repeated, like you remove a sign and then it gets put back, and then it's removed and then it gets put back, does that become like a littering, trespassing, defacing issue?
We recently issued citations for that. People putting advertisement on our poles, we've issued citations, and we can, and the ordinance allows for that.
It does. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else before I continue on? Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everyone in the administration. Communications, Ms. Miller, 6A.
September 25th, 2025, Memorandum and Proposed Resolution from Laura Collins, Director of the Department of Community and Economic Development, and Sarah Citullo, Deputy Director of Community Development. The two seek authorization to execute an agreement with WRT LLC of Philadelphia to lead the development update, the Northside Alive Plan. Cost is $39,960, and completion is expected by September 30th of 2026. There are no renewals. WRT developed the original Northside 2027 plan and was determined to be the best, most cost-efficient option among three quotes.
And a resolution 10A is on the agenda. 6B.
A September 26, 2025 memorandum from Business Administrator Eric Evans advising that a direct deposit for pension state aid in the amount of $5,139,230.78 has been allocated to pension bond payments and police, fire, Pennsylvania Municipal Retirement System, minimum municipal obligations. Breakdown is as follows. $1,545,056.89 for police, $1,545,056.89 for fire, and $2,049,117 for the PMRS.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda. 16.
An October 1st, 2025 memorandum from Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is the Pennsylvania Running Company and the sub-permittee is Arts Quest. The event is the 2025 Running Festival. Events will be held from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on October 17th, 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. on October 18th, and 9 to 10:45 a.m. on October 18th. Premises will include specified locations in Monocacy Park, Payroll Plaza, and Westside Park, as well as East 1st Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between 1st and 2nd Streets.
And resolution 10C is on the agenda tonight. 6D.
An October 1st, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Laura Collins, Director of the Department of Community and Economic Development, and Sarah Satullo, Deputy Director of Community Development, to recommend an agreement with the Center for Public Enterprise of New York to assist Bethlehem in the design and implementation of a mixed income development program known as the Revolving Loan Fund. Cost is $12,000 and completion is expected by December 31st, 2026. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. 6E.
An October 1st, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from World Heritage Coordinator Stephanie Augello. Ms. Augello recommends an agreement with Moravian University to assist in funding the position of World Heritage Site Manager. Cost is $150,000. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. 6F.
A September 30th, 2025 memorandum from Kathy Fletcher, Director of Planning and Zoning, with the attached the 2026-2030 Capital Improvement Program. At September 11th, 2025 meeting, the City Planning Commission unanimously voted to recommend approval of the plan.
And the Committee of the Whole meeting has been scheduled for 6 p.m. on Tuesday, October 21st, 2025, here in Town Hall to review the capital Improvement Plan. Thank you. Moving on to reports, I only have to report that the Committee of the Whole met this evening at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall to discuss proposed amendments to Article 112, titled Campaign Finance Reports. The committee voted unanimously to send that those amendments to full council, so that will appear on a future City Council meeting agenda. That's all I had. Mr. Evans, do you have anything?
No report tonight. Thank you.
Understood. Moving on to ordinances, 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 42, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Any discussion on the second reading for 8A? Yes. Councilwoman Kwiatek?
Just to make clear that this is a second reading, this was something that a commenter asked about, and actually this is connected to the World Heritage Site Manager and moving funds from the downtown initiatives into the cash balance so that we can support that. So that's what that funding was for, Mr. Shire, is that it's actually part of the movement of funds to support the UNESCO World Heritage Site Manager.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? Councilwoman Laird?
Like last time, I'll need to recuse due to a conflict. I work for Moravian University.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Abstain.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 5-0 and with one member abstaining. Moving on to 8B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 43, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. We have no new ordinances this evening, so going right over to resolutions, 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with WRT LLC to lead the development to update the Northside plan. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Mr. Callahan, your earlier question, that would be appropriate to the floor, please.
That block of Broad Street has always been in the Northside Alliance jurisdiction.
Yes.
Yes, it has.
The block, but not the rest of the Northside Library. I mean, it was like additional areas that was added into that.
That's not correct. No, the boundary of Northside Alive has always extended down all the way down Broad Street to Main Street.
I will remind members of the public, please not interrupt a council meeting.
Do you have the plan?
I will remind members of the administration not to engage with members of the public.
I have the plan, which has multiple pages that show the boundaries. This is the 2017 version of the plan. It has always been all the way down Broad Street to me.
Do you have any follow-up questions, Ms. Callahan?
No, I just, I was just wondering if that could be addressed. So if it is, I'll follow up next meeting. Thank you.
Councilman Lear?
Just to confirm, I was going to make sure I hadn't missed something about a boundary changing based on that comment, but I did chair the Economic Vitality Committee from 2017, and we had businesses on the north side of Broad Street at Getter, at that intersection, who were part of Northside Alive since that date and very active volunteers in the group. So I do recall that particularly the Twisted Olive was a really active member in the early days. So thank you for confirming that nothing has changed on that.
I'll also just add that, you know, Northside Alive is an organization that, or it's a neighborhood-based initiative that has a number of different objectives. Certainly blight housing is one, economic vitality is another, you know, major component, and there are different corridors that have different needs. You know, Linden Street is a bit different than Broad Street, and even on Broad Street, there are different needs. You know, if you go past Center East versus if you're downtown. But the objective is always, you know, to involve as many people as possible. Northside Alive, you know, if there are entities that don't even exactly fall within the boundaries, you know, they're welcome to participate. You know, I'm thinking of others on Elizabeth Avenue. If you happen to be right across near Carl's Corner, for example, you're not prohibited from coming and participating, because ultimately the goal is the same, and it's, you know, improving quality of life in the neighborhood, and that's not competing with the downtown. It's very much compatible with the downtown, and there's really not a, I'm not really sure I understand the logic of the connection in the argument, because the reality is these organizations don't compete with each other. They just, you know, they address their objectives and, you know, for the benefit of the community.
Yeah, I would say my experience serving as a volunteer on that committee does line up with that. We had different unique goals identified for our focus. In fact, was the Linden Street corridor and the Broad Street corridor. And there were different goals identified for each of those retail corridors, and plenty of collaboration with the DBA, usually with presence at all of our committee meetings, etc. So, and making sure we weren't conflicting with major events and things like that. So, I was a little surprised to hear about any tensions, because the people who have been really involved in the group had not seemed to experience, but I will admit that I missed a few meetings, so I was like, wait, something happened. So thank you for clarifying.
Any other discussion for members of council? Councilor?
I have a quick question. If we do want to find you have a plan there, was there like a previous plan? Because was there like a Northside 2017? I'm sorry, I'm way more Southside oriented.
Sure.
Southside tomorrow's mapping. So is there,
no, there's only been one plan. It was developed in 2017. It's called the Northside 2027. It's available on the website.
Okay. And have you guys heard any of the, that's the one I'm looking at. I thought maybe there was a 2017 one. Have you guys heard about any friction between the Downtown Business Administration and or the organization and Northside West.
Any other questions or comments? I had one, Ms. Collins. So, and forgive me because I'm not super familiar, so I'm going off of the packet and trying to re-educate myself on something I only look at every couple years. So Northside Alive is a HUD-designated neighborhood revitalization strategy area. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then, so when that was developed a few years ago and then eventually approved by HUD, what was council's role in that process? Did we have to pass a resolution of support, or was there any, I don't remember, to be honest with you, so.
That's a great question. I'm certain because it's HUD that there's like a public hearing component. I don't know if we would have done that at a city council meeting or separately.
I guess what I'm getting at is, was there anything that we, any action council took that outlined what the boundaries were? And then if so, is that same action required? Should there be any changes in the future to the designated, because I'm sure the designated area has boundaries to it that HUD approved, I would assume?
Sure, that is true. We do have to submit, we did submit a map to HUD at the time.
I guess my question is if there is a role for council.
Like to change the boundaries?
Correct, even to submit the plans. I don't remember if we had to or not. It's something you can follow up with us about, please, just so I understand the process and what it would look like or what's required if there is any action of council or if it's purely an administrative function.
So I will say that as part of our, you know, 5-year consolidated planning process, like HUD has asked that we seek reauthorization as part of that process. So when council actually did vote on our consolidated plan, you know, the full draft of that would have been, you know, posted online, and that does include a component that essentially says, you know, hey, we're going to be looking to reauthorize our plan again. And I believe we'll also have to do like an amendment of sorts that would also come to you.
Understood. Thank you, Ms. Collins. Council?
More specifically about the resolution we're looking at tonight, WRT, am I remembering that was the company we worked with for the first plan?
Correct.
And would they be going through a similar process? There were, I know, a number of community meetings and focus groups and neighborhood walks. That'll all happen again?
Yes. Yeah. That is a large component of what they would be brought in to do, is that community engagement piece.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to allocate $5,139,230.78 in 2025 General Municipal Pension System State Aid to the line items specified in the resolution. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Pennsylvania Running Company for the 2025 Bethlehem Running Festival. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with the Center for Public Enterprise to help in the design and implementation of a mixed income development revolving loan fund program. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Council?
Ms. Collins, I'm just really curious about this. Would love to learn a little bit more about what a revolving loan fund is, maybe kind of educate the public a little bit about it in the run-up to this contract.
Sure. So the creation of a revolving loan fund to support you know, mixed income housing development is one of the strategies that's outlined in Opening Doors. So, you know, it's one that we've talked about before, but, you know, it takes quite a while to put something like that together. But the idea would be that a lot of projects that are in the works for housing, you know, face financial challenges, they have gaps, and providing a revolving loan fund as a gap filler gives us an opportunity to support in creative ways and have involvement in creative ways in projects to ensure affordability components. And it's a model that's used in other communities, you know, gaining traction in other places. Most famously, I would say, started in Montgomery County. They have a very robust revolving loan fund program that has supported affordable housing development in their community. We also look often to Chattanooga as a prime example of a more like mid-sized community that has seen success in this program. And the Center for Public Enterprise has worked very closely with Chattanooga and other communities that are exploring this opportunity as well.
Is that Montgomery County, Pennsylvania?
Sorry, Maryland.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right. And so you mentioned the affordability component, and that's really the key of what this is all about. How does that work? Well, or is that part of what they're going to actually
explore
for us? Yes,
the short answer is it works differently in different places based on a number of factors, like, you know, market considerations and, you know, municipal capacity and, you know, what kind of entity is running the program and how you want to structure it, right? And we can develop things, you know, all sorts of criteria, you know, whether it's going to be, it must be 30% affordable, and other questions like what kind of like lending role do we take? Primary, or, you know, it's mezzanine financing, and then what kind of like ownership and long-term control do you maintain over a project? And there's a lot of different ways that can happen in different places. So we have some models kind of that we're starting to flesh out, but I think Center for Public Enterprise is going to be, you know, really helping take those models and make them implementable here.
And it's a $12,000 contract.
It is, yes. Yeah.
So, and I would just say that it gives the city a little bit of juice, a little bit of hand in the game in terms of having, you know, the ability to make projects, you know, help make projects happen and move and maybe faster and things like that. I'm really hopeful that we get some great answers from them and you know, have a way to move forward in doing something like this. So, thank you.
Any other discussion from our council? I'll start with Councilwoman Wilhelm.
You answered some of my questions already. I was curious to know sort of if there were visions that we had. So it sounds like you've looked at other models and maybe there are ways that in particular you would like Center for Public Enterprise to consider, but that we are really allowing them to kind of look at Bethlehem and see what might work best here. But I guess just overall to say, this feels like a very modest investment for something that has the potential for a great payoff. And one of the things that we hear most with regard to building affordable housing is, for example, because I know there are many ways this could be used, the cost of construction. So, you know, filling that gap, speeding up timelines, potentially empowering smaller local developers to participate, I think the investment is likely to pay off manyfold. I'm looking forward to supporting it.
Yeah. And one of the things that Center for Public Enterprise, they're philanthropically funded, and which is why their proposal is so low and so far, you know, below what it would cost in like a more traditional market-based for this kind of service. But this really is the work that they do as part of like a mission-driven, philanthropically funded organization.
Councilwoman Leah.
Thank you for that last bit, because I was wondering why it was providing this service. I'm looking, like, why was the price tag so low? But I was also curious, I'm looking at some of the projects that they have put in, and when we read through Opening Doors, we see that there's really not a lot of land available. So I'm curious, and I'm not asking you to, like, you know, be a psychic here, but what kind of things do you even expect that they would propose for a city like ours? And we've talked about the fact that our vacancy rate is so low, our developable land is very low and mostly in private hands, that would need more substantial things like LRTAs, not, you know, a couple dollars from the city. So, like, what kind of projects are we thinking that this might help with?
Well, so actually one of the things they're going to do is pull existing developers, private developers who have projects that are maybe stalled, or the kind of projects where people are saying, like, we can't do this without LRTA, or we can't do this without subsidy, you know, and we also would be willing to include an affordable component if you can make the numbers work, and figuring out how to package incentives that will both, like, support the private development, but also ensure that there's affordability that we have some control over. So it is actually looking at some of those more like market rate type projects to start and see how you can kind of incentivize affordable into them with a revolving loan fund subsidy packaged with other things. Okay. Like, I think in a lot of communities you do see tax abatements, mm-hmm. you know, connected with this, and or expedited permitting or other like incentives that lower an overall project cost.
Okay. I feel like this might give us a little bit more control, because we do talk about the rate of development, and sometimes it feels at a breakneck pace, as the gentleman was saying earlier, because we had so many projects that were approved at one point and now they're all getting built. But now it does feel like certain of our most developable land is stalled. And like, if this is going to be a way that can give us more of a say in what we're seeing, then this could be kind of like the cooling effect that we were talking about earlier. So, but in a way that would incentivize affordability. So this is pretty exciting and a very modest price, all things considered. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? Ms. Collins had one question, and it's different but similar. Years ago, and this predates my time on council, maybe 15-ish years ago, would that have been an example where the city had a revolving loan fund but for commercial development? I know I think the Mint was one of the projects that came online due to something. I don't think it's active anymore, whatever that program was, but I'm remembering a news article from 15 years ago and reading that the city had some kind of similar structure, but it was to get commercial developments going. And
I don't remember exactly what Mint would have been a part of, but there have been various programs. Okay. Like FRED is one that comes to mind. I think, you know, there's program Pembroke that I know that participated in that. I think some on Main Street. But some of those go back
many years.
10, 15 years. Okay. But yes, it's not a new model to have a revolving loan fund. I think that but the focus here is on mixed income housing development, which is sort of a whole different animal.
Good luck. Any other discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10-D.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Moravian University to assist in funding the World Heritage Site Manager position. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion.
Again, recusing from this one.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Recuse.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 5-0 with one member abstaining. 10F.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature Bethlehem Resolution is hereby granted for 306 South New Street to install two new wall signs on the main facades and various new signage in the storefront windows and doors. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion. Call roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Last agenda item, 10G.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 13 and 15 East 3rd Street to clean and restore the brick facade and terracotta details. Paint, metal panel, arch, window insets, trim, and fascia barely brown in color, and paint, window trim, wood trim, all flashing fascia and accents deep forest green in color. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safe, everyone. This meeting is adjourned.
Not too long. My favorite.